This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. Well done, team. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their half-day or full-day tours of Canberra. You know, for the longest time, Canberra has been known for two things. Legal fireworks and... Oh, no, I can't mention that second thing, can I? Questacon? Let's say Questacon. But it should be known for three things, really. And that third thing is its ever-expanding beer scene. So if you'd like to check out the great beers of the nation's capital, book a tour now at daves.com.au.
Are things always this loose on your podcast? Radio Bridge News, we record Tuesday mornings at 9 o'clock. We're drinking coffee in three different states. This is much more fun.
Sessionable.
Welcome to Sessionable. We are here in Beechworth, which is exciting. We're in an old nunnery in the Priory in Beechworth.
So imagine if you watch, right? Yeah, if you watch The Shining, you've got a pretty good idea of what's going on right now. Yeah. I just found a piano in a bathroom.
We've got some awesome guests tonight because there's some beer royalty in town.
Basically. Yeah, it's going to be a blockbuster episode, actually.
I think so. Yeah. So joining us, we are in Beechworth, so it's only fair that we're joined by Ben Krause from Bridge Road Brewers. Welcome to the podcast again, Ben.
Yeah, thank you. It seems like it was only 2 months ago,
mate. You're going to give giving Doc and Dave Patton run for money for
Toast is on that list as well.
Yeah. Oh, really? I've been on another podcast. I think you might have heard of it, Brews News. I think I've been on there more than any other.
Speaking of Brews News.
Well, I was going to say, with no connection at all, our next. we got Pete Mitchum, Professor Pilsner from Radio Brews News.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me. And I feel like a little bit of a fraud because I was really handily dropping naggers off here. I've just arrived in Beechworth, literally come up from Bendigo.
We've dragged you on
after
this.
And you're working straight away,
Festival, yeah. And bumped into him. He was, I've never seen him leaving a brewery quite, I've never seen anyone actually leaving a brewery quite so quickly, but it's been a long day for some of the punters, and Ben was sort of keen to get out, and he said, look, come up, I'm just about to record a podcast, and I said, look, I'll drive you up there. Next thing you know, here I am, microphone in hand, joining you guys, which is strange. I feel very honoured, because despite 160-odd episodes of Brews News, this is the first time I've actually ever been a guest on someone else's podcast.
I'm proud it's us.
It is an absolute pleasure. It's an honour, actually.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So you're going to be our sobriety check for the day because we've all been having a couple of days of festivities and you've
and we all
just
think we're pretty sober.
Oh, yeah,
this is my first in 6 hours.
Yeah.
Is it Mayday Hills?
So we've got the first beer in front of us and it's the Mayday Hills raspberry. And it's not the newest Mayday Hills anymore.
No. Did you get a chance to taste
it? I did try the amber, yes.
Yeah, so that's a bit different to the other ones.
The amber was really, really
the
nice.
The amber is actually... so the amber is your new Mayday Hills release, is
yes,
that correct?
Yep. And a first sour, proper sour.
Proper sour.
Yeah.
Like, well, because it is a sour.
Yeah.
It was, and I love the little...
electrocuted man.
That's great.
Yeah.
Caution.
There was lots of Googling of German warning electrocution signs.
Because I had a rabbit hole you want to go down. Yeah.
I had that image
that
in my
list?
Mind. Yeah. I'm probably on that list. There's a whole lot of other reasons I'm on that list. I was Googling Russian conspiracy theories the other day, and I was like, oh, no, what have I done?
Yeah, I don't think they'll
let
you in the US
address.
Now.
Yeah.
Did you have a genuine concern then that with it, you described it as your first proper sour, that your regular client base would be a bit shocked by it? Is that
a pun on the label? There we go.
Did you want to shock them, though? Was that
no,
idea,
no. It's funny because everyone's sort of, I'd say everyone, lots of people... treat Brettanomyces, and we talked about it last time, and assume they're sour beers, and they aren't necessarily. They can be a little bit sour when you put sour fruits in them.
Call it tart, not sour.
But that one is, that has lactose sourness, so that's a proper soured beer. So that was a real point of difference in that batch. And the next beer in the Mayday series that's in the fooder at the moment, we use 300 litres of Sangiovese juice.
Ooh, where from?
Which from Beechworth, so from... Fighting Galley Road, so it's like a kilometre that way on the escarpment. as you know, when you go down the corners and leave town and head towards a hop garden, on top of that ridge line, there's a vineyard.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay, cool.
So that beer will probably be quite tart, a little bit sour as well, because the pH of that juice was really quite low. Cool. So it'll be interesting to see what that does.
You know, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, we should probably talk a little bit about the raspberry that we're actually drinking, which is because we mentioned it in passing and then got onto the all the rest. Yeah.
So the raspberry we have done, and we're assuming it's called the raspberry because it doesn't really, it doesn't say raspberry. It's a 100% Brettanomyces ale fermented with raspberries, and it has a picture of a raspberry on it.
Is that the name of the beer? 100% fermented.
We call it raspberry. There's a raspberry on it. We had a blueberry beer. We had a blackberry beer. They looked the same, but had a different berry on the front. It's a similar way of making the beer that we did with blue and black, but we sort of felt maybe those notes, they were well integrated, but maybe not upfront enough. So we, with those, we added 100 kilos of fruit to about 2,200 liters of Brett fermented yellow beer. With this one, we made a base beer of an IPA. Then we also dry hopped it, but we put in 150 kilos of freshly picked hand-picked raspberries from Stanley just up the road. So I'm yet to see the invoice. I think it might not.
Could be a shock.
I think it will be. I mentioned this last time, I think, that we were talking about, but I still haven't seen it. So I've told the farmer that I'll bring him samples, and I haven't yet. And I think that's when I get the invoice. So
just don't bring him samples and you'll be sorted.
Oh, sorry, we ran out. There no invoice.
Don't you usually pay your local suppliers in like underfills?
Yeah, low fills. You know, low staff grab the good ones. They load them up and take them out. They're fringe benefits. Yeah, so it's actually IPA-based beer, but it doesn't come out inherently hoppy. The idea was
it really
to have,
doesn't. No.
Because you often see raspberry beers, and we wanted it to be... we've got a hopped raspberry jam. I don't know if you saw that. Raspberries as a plant.
I'm stealing Tom's wonder if she stopped
from
you.
I've got a little bit, yeah. Your rep gave me a jar to take to my chef at the pub. To do something with.
So that combo of hops and raspberries is really quite nice, and the plants grow really similarly.
Climates would be very similar as well.
All those things. So, and it looks the same. So they went really well together in the jam. And so we made an IPA rather than a standard raspberry beer. But the raspberry takes over. It is bitter and it is hoppy and it is, believe it or not, 7.7% alcohol.
It does not taste
That's incredible. That really is incredible.
I don't know about you guys, but if you gave this to me and didn't tell me about IPA, I wouldn't even think about it.
Yeah, you wouldn't think of that.
I also wouldn't think 7.7. Like not even close. It's I do enjoy it because there's a few raspberry beers on the market today, but this is one of the most sort of raspberry forward ones, I think. Like it really does taste like a punnet of raspberries, which is, you know, that's a good thing. Whereas some others are, you know, you get a hint of raspberry or you get some notes of raspberry, but this is very raspberry forward, which is awesome. But it's also does not taste like 7.7.
I think the only inkling that it's an IPA, if you think about it a lot, there is bitterness at the back. There's lots of bitterness going on. Yep. So the IBUs are up there.
But seriously, whoever's job it was to dial in the funk should be applauded, because to me, it's got just the right amount of funkification.
We get that with using this Brett C strain all the time. They're sort of bordering on funky, but not too funky. And it's just nice. The texture's good.
It's the perfect amount, yeah.
There's cleanness to it, which is almost something you don't associate. And this drinks beautifully cleanly, but it's still got just that little bit of, I'm kind of in that family.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really cool seeing people today like, oh Brett, no, I don't like Brett. And I tried the Sambo. It's like, oh, that's not Brett. It's
too clean.
Yeah, like I don't taste any like horse or horse blanket or what I call Easter show or whatever. And I was that's not Brett. It's like, no, that's just another type of Brett. It's another insinuation of Brett. But
We're talking about people today. We should probably talk a bit about the festival today, about the whole reason we're here in Beechworth, which was the High Country Hops Festival at Bridge Road Brewers. A festival that you've put together a few years and running now.
I think it's the third year now. I lose track of years.
They all blend into one after a while, right?
Because I've had three invitations and this is the first time I've actually been able to make it.
And here you are drinking funky and sour beers.
It's your first beer in Beechworth.
I did it tonight, and my first beer since I got here.
Yeah. It is an IPA technically, right? tell us a bit about the festival, about what it's about and kind of, what goes on at High Country Hops.
Yes, so essentially it's a beer festival. We've been to beer festivals before. But it's really about trying to put a real focus on hop harvest, and particularly harvest up here in our region where probably Victoria's biggest production is, or definitely is, at HPA at Ovens on the way between Beechworth and
Brighton. Half an hour from where we are right now.
Half an hour away. It's a chance for us to sort of showcase what we do, celebrate hops. We've been making wet hop beers, I think, for a decade. Again, the years slip by.
A decade of wet hop beers. Wow.
So it might be a year less or a year more, but I'm not sure.
We'll call it a decade. That's pretty close. Yeah.
So we've been doing that. It was hard going in the early days to get it right, but we really want to champion it and get people on board with wet hop beers, and also promote our region. We have the High Country Brewery Trail. There's more than 8 brewers in our region, but there's 8 that are part of the High Country Brewery Trail, so we invite them along and try to make it a good sort of inclusive local event. We have so many food and wine festivals up here, and beer's always been on the side, and sure, it's coming. You know, every food and wine festival now has a brewery. When I started the brewery, I used to have to write letters to wine festivals explaining why I should be allowed to attend and beg. and then I was just saying, you know, it's basically the same, but we make beer. And there was always higher fees. If you sold beer, you had to pay 3 times in the end, you ended up being really busy because there's 20 wineries.
Because everyone wanted a beer.
Yeah, one brewery. But that's certainly changed. But it's nice to have a festival up here that just focus on locally made craft beer and locally grown hops and trying to get different things. A local ice creamery did 3 different hop ice creams. Gin producer did a hop gin. We had some hop earrings and those sorts of things.
Well, so I think Millwall cheese as well.
Millwall cheese did a wash rind.
Me too, by my wash rind. And cheese. Yes. Oh, that was so good.
Just about focusing on that and trying to, we really aim it at metro areas, trying to get people out and show them not just another beer fest, but our own sort of version of a beer fest.
Yeah.
It was funny though, because like coming to Beechworth, I've run into heaps of people from Melbourne.
Yes.
We got people from Sydney, from Canberra. Yeah, I think it's an amazing celebration of the region. And I've been coming to this area for a little while now, and it's always great to bring other people with us. And you try and describe it, and we're literally doing the drive today with 2 buses with, I don't know, it was 15 of us or whatever it was. And you driving, it's like, this is actually really nice. It's like, yeah, I know. It's cool, isn't it? It's such a cool area.
It's such a beautiful like valley that drive.
With Mount Buffalo off to the side as well. Yeah. It's awesome. Like, it really stands out.
It does. And driving past the hop farm, last time we were down here, last year for darker days, the hop farm was just empty.
Obliterated. It was winter.
It's the first time I've actually seen hops on
I got to see a bunch of hops. And even half of it was empty because I think all the Galaxy and Pride had been taken away. Maybe we'll take a quick break here.
Yeah, awesome.
Sweet.
Sessionable.
Yeah, so we now have another beer in front of us. It's the excellent Bright Brewery MIA IPA, and we'll talk a bit about it in a little bit. But I thought it's probably a good chance to sort of, we've talked about the High Country Hops Festival, but Dave's has put on a great tour for us, and that's kind of why we're here. So it's probably a good chance to talk about what we've done on this tour and where we've been. We've been to a few cool places that I would not have gone to otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so this kind of all started Sydney Beer Week last year in October. I think Ben and I were talking. He's like, hey, you know, you guys have done some trips before. Do you want to come down for the Hops Festival? I was like, well, I want to come. And that's how the genesis for all these trips is Dave and I want to go somewhere, so we might as well put a bus and get other people to come with us. And so that's how it pretty much all started. It's like, well, yes, hops, yes. Bridge Road, yes. Oh, we're coming. So it was one of those things, you know, we were talking about, we've done a bus somewhere. Why don't we do one from Sydney, one from Canberra, and see how it goes?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're like, oh, crap, we got to close off bookings because we're
Sydney bus sold out, which is awesome.
Yeah. So, we've done a bit of a trip. So we left 7 o'clock Sydney time.
We left Friday. I think it was 7:30 a.m. was
7:30 because we went and had to get coffee first.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they left Canberra at 10:30.
Lucky them.
We met at
Yass, but then we went to Tumut River Brewing Co.
Yeah, for lunch, which was awesome.
Which was really interesting. I hadn't heard of them before, and we went to their brewing co, and they've it's very ragtag, you know, do what they can do with what they've got. And they've sort of built it organically over a few years. They've had a couple of hurdles and a couple of stumbles, but I love their story. And they've been making nice beers. The beer was good. You know, that's the...
Well, they're about to launch into a brand new chapter, aren't they, right? So they very much had this big kind of... Well,
shed.
Well, not a big. It was a shed, right? Essentially, yeah. that could fit a few fermenters in, and they were brewing in a single room. And they've eventually got planning permission to put a dedicated bar room onto the side of it.
Well, I think they've built the room. They just need to get the council to.
Well, actually, we caught up with Tim from the brewery, and he was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm running a bit late. I was just at a council meeting. We're just getting DA approval now." So it's like, yeah, we've kind of built it, and now we can. Yeah, now we can officially say that we built it. So they're going pretty well. But I was really stoked with the beers. I thought they were just really
I thought they were very good beers and doing something interesting in that, you know, in that area and being a, you know, being a regional brewer. And he was talking about his sort of inspirations and he mentioned Bridge Road. Basically, he came to Beechworth and saw Bridge Road and was like, that's what Tumut needs. Was, you know, a tourist destination spot that is a brewery. And you know, he was talking about putting a kids playground in and stuff like that and making it a more sort of a destination spot and make, you know, bring more people to Tumut.
Yeah.
And again, like the most important things was the beers were good. You know, we had the
Pilsner, the JW Pilsner.
Yeah, it was
really
a
nice.
Like a session Pilsner. It was a 3.5%.
That Galaxy Pale Ale, which was really good.
Yeah, it was. It was nice.
What else was there? I had a...
The Harold's Dunkel, did you mention?
Yeah, the Dunkel. Yeah.
Really surprised me. I bumped into... Met Simon and Leah at the first Albury... Great Australian Beer Festival, Albury, last year, in their beautifully appointed caravan, which kind of, you know, like people in Brunswick or perhaps Marrickville or wherever it might be, or Newtown, try to...
Say hipsters, right?
Yeah, kind of paint on a patina of age and kind of neglect.
Yeah.
But that's all, that's genuine. That's that, like, it's
100%,
an old,
that's what they're,
a beautiful
that's what they're,
old caravan, yeah, and they've just gone, no, it's just, you know, it is what it is, and yeah, it holds together somehow. But it just kind of really tells the story beautifully.
Yeah.
And yet the Dunkel, I thought, it didn't have... I reckon the Dunkel that you used to make was probably the last... Dunkel, you know, commercially available Dunkel that I had, and I thought it's just one of those ones that's kind of just dropped off the radar.
It's such a beautiful style.
So my expectations weren't high, and I was blown away. I thought it was a really well crafted beer.
Where is the Chevalier?
The
Dunkel? Yeah. We've got labels for it. We just have way too many beers. If I threatened to bring it back, I'd probably be fired from my job as boss. We just went through the brew schedule for the year going forward, and we just have. You know, I was mentioning to someone today, we released our magical Easter Unicorn last week. We'll release Harvest and Dark Harvest next week. The week after that, we have 3 Bling the Wilds coming out. That's where the Dunkel is. There's just too many beers to do. We've got the labels and we can do it. I just got to find the time and the right moment.
Maybe you can do a further Dunkel.
Further Dunkel, yeah.
Ooh, it just sounds good.
Yeah, but then if you don't have...
He's already printed the label, so he can't do that.
It's not just right handwrite. Yeah. Dunkel.
Maybe you just need a few more tanks to make more beers.
Oh, this is... now it's getting personal, I think.
Do you have room to put more tanks in, Ben?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got new tanks ordered.
Where are they going? Your brewery is quite squishy at the moment.
Yes. Our brewery's always been squishy for... 12 years, so squeezing things in is what we do well. Vertical space.
Contract real bright.
Yeah.
we probably should say who that was asking that question. We've got James from Bright here, returning to the podcast.
Hello.
He's just in the corner stirring shit.
I'm sharing a microphone with Prof here, so Prof and I are getting very handsy together.
I'm actually breaking rule number one. I used to do stand-up quite a while. I had to give it up because people kept laughing at me. But the rule number one is never hand control of the microphone over to the heckler. So from now on, when James wants to speak, I will hand the microphone over like that. James to speak, and then I'll bring it back.
Anyway, let's get back to the episode. So we were talking about we've been to Tumut. After Tumut, we...
Came into Bridge Road.
We came into Beechworth. Had a bit of a session at Bridge Road, and we had a really nice dinner at the Empire.
Yep.
Yeah, a really nice curry dinner.
It was. It was a great dinner. So, yeah, Ben joined us along with...
Tom from Bright,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was representing James from Black Dog as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
And James from our brewery, not James from Bright Brewery, was representing
Too
us.
Too many Jameses.
Too many High Country Jameses, yeah. So we had an awesome dinner, which you guys put on for us. And we had, I said Black Dog beers, Bright beers, Bridge Road beers.
B breweries. Seriously. Can a brewery in the High Country open up that doesn't start with B? That would be really helpful. Thank you.
We forgot Blizzard, though.
King Valley.
Yeah, and Social Bandit. Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a great night last night. And then today we did a trip out this morning to Bright because we had a quick tour of the roastery at 6 pence.
Yeah, and also
I'm saying 6 penny all day, so it's 6 pence.
And we also the Reed & Co. distillery, which are the two of them, the roastery and the distillery in the same building. Awesome space.
Yeah.
Awesome
really
coffee.
Yeah, the coffee's really good. Yeah.
And to my confusion, I was getting emails from Liam and he was going to the Old Mill Coffee Roastery.
That, in my defense, that wasn't me. And I was a bit worried.
I'm like, where is the Old Mill?
I was like, here's this itinerary we're going. I was like, oh, Old Mill Coffee Roastery. Haven't heard of that one. I was like, oh, crap, what have I done? But it wasn't me. It was someone else for you.
Yeah. And then we got to have a tour of... Bright Brewery's new, fancy new, massive facility.
With shiny. Lots of space.
So shiny. Lots of space.
Yeah. There's a lot of room for activities, yeah.
Perhaps they need some dunkel in there.
Actually, I saw this, like, there was two tanks are sitting there with nothing in it. You could probably put some dunkel in those.
They were begging for some dunkel, weren't they?
Yeah.
It's not fancy, it's just big. It's about long-term growth. It's got, hi, everyone, I'm James from Bright Brewery. It's been one of the most exciting projects we've ever had at Bright Brewery because we have had, after 12 years of running a brewery, we've had a blank slate to build a brewery that we, the way we want, and that will give us 10 years of growth. So we've been able to build a shed and put a big brewery in it and take our time and use our knowledge and use our experience to build a brewery that's going to be there for the long term. So,
Brad Rogers said that 2 years ago.
And now he's got two big breweries. and he's building a third.
Exactly.
He did. We don't have Pacific Ale, though. Different aspirations. Know your market, Ben. Know your market.
But have
seriously.
you ever heard a brewer complain that he's got too much space?
Yeah.
Nah.
So, and that's the great thing is that we've also got space around us, Ben. Do you know? Like, it's nice to have space around you as well as the space that you've actually got. So,
pull the daggers out, mate. What's going on?
Something that me and the listeners are missing?
Do you guys have beef or what's going on?
And look, even with the space we've got at the moment, and the brewery that you saw this morning, it's still only going to be half of what Ben's doing at Bridge Road. Probably less than half. But it's a really fantastic time for us, not only because we have this great production facility to finally make enough beer to get out to the cities of Australia, but we also have our original brew house, 12-hex system, that can do basically whatever dunkel. We want on it. Because we can dunkel finally make brewery. A dunkel.
Yeah.
That is
better. You get the labels for free, by the way.
I've got some labels. So, Ben's going to have a chat to me later about contracting his dunkel out because all his beer is made in Beechworth. And we're close enough because, Yeah, so get excited, people, because pretty much every month now or every couple of weeks, we can brew a new seasonal limited release beer on that original brew house. It's technically a giant pilot system why we have our big... the brewers just want to brew on the new brew house because that's awesome and it's state-of-the-art and it's like everything that they want in a brew house. But yeah, the original workhorse of the 12-hick German-built Beering brew pub system is there to do whatever we want on, and that's exciting times for us.
I really don't care what you brew. Can we just have some beers in Sydney? And Prof, you want some in Brisbane as well, I'm assuming.
Oh, in Melbourne.
Oh, you're in Melbourne. Yeah, sorry. Matt's sorry.
Confusion. Matt Kierkegaard.
Yeah. I apologise. Yeah.
Well, we're also sitting with our new Melbourne sales rep who started today. It's his first day on the job, So I put him straight, welcome, Mick. Straight into the podcast. Mick, say, why have you decided to work for Bright?
Why have you decided to work for Bright?
Exactly. And that is why I hired Mick. So,
so this is poor, mate. First day, he's already at a beer festival. Basically, a podcast. Jesus.
Be a parrot. Repeat what I say.
But like you finished your last job yesterday, right?
I did. I was previously working with Bad Shepherd Brewing Co. Did the Good Beer Week Gala at Fed Square last night up until about 8:30. Played a gig. I was on stage at 9 o'clock. And at 7 a.m. I was on the road to Beechworth to become the Bright sales ambassador.
So at midnight, you like rip your Bad Shepherd shirt open, and then was there a bright shirt underneath?
No, at midnight I was still at the pub.
Nice.
That's dedication. That's why you hired him.
Good people, good vision.
Good beer.
Respect the beer. Yeah. And finally, like, there's an opportunity for something that I truly believe in to make its way to, you know, from the mountains to Melbourne.
Are you the first, like, on road in Melbourne for Bright?
I believe I'm the inaugural, yeah.
First sales rep, right?
Yeah.
Ever, yeah.
Like, dedicated sales rep. Yeah. I believe some of the stock had made its way previously. I had seen Stubborn Russian around.
Yeah. I mean, as with the case with small breweries, you can sell a case here or a keg there. It's quite easy if you get the right pointy end of the market with bar owners or bottle shop owners who want that unique beer. And especially 10 years ago when there was only 50 breweries in Australia, it was a lot easier to sell beer around the country. So Bright Beer has been out there and about, but it's only been a trickle here and a trickle there. To actually get beer into the market properly, as Ben would know, you need people on the ground advocating for your beer, being an ambassador for your beer, and developing those face-to-face relationships. So you can't just pick up the phone these days and sell enough beer to support a production brewery these days. So we've been a destination brewery, and that's been our business focus. That's been our business plan for the last decade, to be a destination brewery, to bring people to Bright, and whatever we got outside of that as wholesale was a bonus, and it was a great thing and great to support the rise of craft beer in Australia. But to really move beer and get beer out there these days, you need people on the ground. You need great craft beer ambassadors.
And do you think getting more beer out of the market into places like Melbourne, Sydney, other places, Canberra, do you think that will make it more of a destination brewery as well?
That's our target. That's our purpose, to advocate for people coming to Bright and trying the beer fresh in the environment that it's brewed in. And that's exactly why we exist, because we exist to create a beer for the Bright experience. So absolutely. Hopefully, when we're putting beer on a shelf in Melbourne or any other city around the country, it's an advertisement for visiting Bright.
Great. Speaking of trying beer fresh in Bright, the beer we're drinking at the moment, James, it doesn't get much fresher than this.
It's a bit uncarbonated because I just poured it off the tap on our from our jockey box today into this stainless steel growler that I received as a sample from some random company that wanted to sell me growlers but didn't actually contact
me. I've seen these with people's logos on them around a lot. I'm pretty sure there's a Dave's one sitting in the office somewhere.
So we kegged this beer yesterday specifically for this event. So it's our MIA IPA, nice 7% American IPA, Citra and Mosaic in the kettle, and Simcoe dry hop. And it's a beautiful, smooth, hopefully drinking West Coast-ish type American IPA. But we kegged it off yesterday, just racked two kegs specifically for this event so we could have a fresh hoppy beer. And this is what you're drinking now, and hopefully you will see through the lack of carbonation and enjoy the beer itself.
What makes you say West Coast-ish? Why is it West Coast-ish rather than full West Coast?
It's probably a little bit darker and not quite as clear as a real true West Coast IPA. When you think about West Coast IPAs, you think about the clarity, you think about the golden hue of it. So it's a little bit on the darker side because we don't filter any of our beers. We don't have any filter technology. We don't have a centrifuge or anything yet. Hopefully that will come soon enough.
Yeah.
So it's not quite two style if you put it in a judging panel. Ben, would you agree with that? You're the beer judge around you.
I think it's a pretty solid example.
I think it's
we never judge a beer as West Coast IPA. So
yeah, okay, fair enough.
It'd be just judged as
so maybe
as an
not
IPA.
On appearance. It's not quite.
It's
West
not
Coast-ish.
As yellow. Is there? Yeah. Is there some other malt in the bill other than just?
Yeah,
pale malt?
I think there's probably the slightest bit. Not crystal, but something. There's something
carapils.
Yeah. It's not, but yeah. So it's probably a bit darker than the best of the best West Coast, but definitely the hop profile is very West Coast-ish.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty fucking good. Yeah.
So while we've been bathing in fresh hops for the last couple of days, Prof, you've been somewhere else.
I've been in Bendigo.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, I guess, you know, it's a regional town, a couple of hours north of or northeast of Melbourne, and. Sort of central Victoria, so in the Goldfields region. Really interesting market, and this is the sixth Bendigo Craft Beer and Cider Festival that I've been involved with that they've run. Weather was a bit of a bummer today, but really interesting to see over the years just the growth. You've almost not got to be well. It's a couple of things. One is, and you guys have probably seen this with your experience with beer festivals, is that it's no longer okay to sort of just set up a card table and a jockey box and think that you're going to sell enough beer to pay for the trip.
Yeah,
you've got to have a something, you know. Yeah. So we're getting much better, I think, at merchandising, at telling our story, which is really, I guess, what sets us apart from mainstream beer, if you like.
Bumping in here, it's really interesting to hear that. I remember when we first did the gala showcase, it was last night. It used to be about
the microbrewery showcase,
about regional brewers coming to the city, and they had to supplement it with Mountain Goat and city breweries because we didn't have enough. And I remember we rocked up with a banner stand and a banner. We were the only brewery that had marketing material. Like, wow. And then Two Brothers changed the game. They had this massive sign that was cut out. They came with US marketing. And then in 2015, we exhibited our beer at Firestone Walker Festival in the States.
Wow. It's an invitational festival, right?
Yeah. And we also did a beer festival in Florida. And I rocked up thinking, you know, I had banners printed in the States and had them on site and set them up. It's the only fucking person that had banners and not a trestle table and a jockey box. All these big brewers just rock up. Heat exchange plates. They had coils in their blue jockey boxes.
When's the last time you've seen a coil in a jockey box?
Yeah, and like, there were some big brands there, but there were some really well-known US brands, and everyone had a trestle table, and they had a blue jockey box that was standard issue, and some of them bought signage, and others did not, and that's how they did a beer festival. And I was just blown away in Australia that we're so good at merchandising, and you know, when I look around today at Bright Stand and the other guys, everyone comes with really clean, clear branding message and show what they're doing. But I just couldn't believe it. And the same, we did Shelton Brothers Festival in Florida, and it's just trestle tables. Everyone gets 2 meters of space, a blue jockey box, and you know, some
Shelton Brothers have to be one of the biggest distributors of beer in the world, right?
They've got everything
easily.
And I was not wanting to be behind my stand because they have so much good beer just walking around. And
depending on where in the States, there's really weird laws about serving and drinking. I know there's a lot of states
I don't know. What are they going to do?
Like 60 mil maximum.
Spoken with people in certain states where literally if you're serving beer, you have 0% alcohol and people will come around and check.
It wasn't like that. Firestone Walker Festival was you pay to get in and you get a cup and... You get when you pay to be in there, you get all the food and drink that you can have for the day. You just pay a ticket entry.
Yeah,
it's awesome. But yeah, so going on that, it's funny how you mentioned that in Australia. And I was thinking about it today because we're all regional brewers and none of us are a big brewery. But everyone has really professional and their own way of presenting things. And I just didn't see that, and I expected to be some little guy blown out of the water. Sure, there were some, but majority just rocked up. There was guys with foamy beer pouring into jugs and doing all the stuff that you see happening everywhere.
It's good where it's not just
you guys have this sorted.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to point out is one thing that I've really been loving recently is this whole idea of kind of themed festivals. So today was all about hops. It's all about fresh hops from the local hop gardens. All the breweries who came had like wet hopped beers. Other examples are the Bright Darker Days Festival. You know, it's a middle of winter festival. It's all about dark beers. And that
dark
whole like
beers, darker days. Come to Darker Days on 30th of June.
You can't help yourself, can you, James?
But that whole idea of themed festivals, I think, is a good counterpoint to that trestle table. And, you know, because there were a few breweries today who just had a trestle table and a jockey box, but they were pouring some really cool beers. And that to me is, that's enough.
Yeah, Luke Robertson, you can pour really good beers with just a trestle table.
Oh, I wasn't going to call out Luke because that yeah. I feel like I don't know. But just if on that, Sessual can stand
interested
that.
To hear your the panel's thoughts on. You've got to stay relevant. Like we've got 450 breweries at the moment, but yeah. More importantly, we've got 150 in planning. So yeah. Over the next 2-3 years. There's just and we're still, you know, the 6% and we're very much, you know, at the pointy end.
Oh yeah, we're right on the end of the tip. Yeah.
And there's 94% who yeah. a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. still don't know our beer. So how do we sell that story? How do we tell them the 96% or the 94%? How do we tell them about, you know, what it is that we're so passionate about that we're sitting here in a convent in the middle of the night?
Well, I mean, even just doing something like this festival is a way to do it. Like, and it's not just because it's a Dave's thing, but like we've got guys on this tour who drink Coopers as their everyday beer and just wanted to come and check out something different. So they're coming down here and they're probably drinking some of the best beers in the country at the moment and they're loving it, but they wouldn't even know what this was. So they didn't know about the area. They just wanted to come and check out something different.
But don't the 450... Let alone, like, I reckon if you're one of the 150 at the moment, you are as mad as a cut snake. Like, why would you want to get into this business just at the moment when there's... I'm not saying the market's flooded, but it's so hard for established brewers to
stay relevant. Instead of building a brewery, you invest in a time machine and just go back to it.
What I especially love about this region is all the breweries here are very focused on regionality, and I think that is the way forward. Like, I think if you're opening a brewery today, don't open a brewery in Marrickville or in Fitzroy or whatever, open a brewery in a small country town where you can serve that market. You can be a tourist spot. Again, I don't own a brewery in that kind of market. But I think if you look at the States as an example, and obviously there's lots of differences between Australia and the States in terms of population and spread, but the best breweries in the States, they only serve their town. Like they don't serve, like they're not in New York and serving LA.
But there's a few other things that need to line up. Like, you know, there's no coincidence the fact that we're just 3 hours out of Melbourne. So you're a stone's throw away, a day trip away, which affects...
And also the fact that there's enough local breweries in this area that you can all support each other and do cool things like today and like Darker Days and do, you know, the High Country Brewers Trail and kind of be this connected web of brewers but still be looking after your own little region. I think that's at least, I don't know, in my mind, I think that's sort of what breweries should be focusing on, and that's a really, really smart way forward is kind of being very regional and not trying to necessarily compete in the big city, because the big cities are really overcrowded. There's too much beer in the big cities.
Don't say that. They've just built a new brewery. Like,
I'm not in the city.
I'm going to shit on all of that because...
Please do. I'm not right. This is just my work
wherever you are. I think what I saw today and what I experienced today was the passion of the people pouring the beer.
Yeah.
And they weren't just slinging beers. I mean, I think slinging beers is probably one of the worst terms that's come out.
But we've all seen people just slinging booze.
Slinging booze is terrible. What you saw today...
Pouring frothies.
...is that people didn't just go, you know, what do you want? They really sold the experience of the beer that they were drinking. So, I went around to the different stores. You know, we've got 8 different breweries there.
Yeah.
And asked them what I should try. And they know that I work for a brewery. They know that I understand how it all works. But they still sold me the passion of what they have put into this beer and why this beer is the beer that I should
drink. And
you
know what else I really loved is when you're at one brewery stand and you're talking to them, you're like, oh, have you tried the other? What have you been over here? Have you tried this one? And like, they're recommending everyone else's breweries because they're like,
go check out the other beer that's down there. And that's in, and I think it starts behind the bar, you know, and it starts with the training. It starts with the staff understanding. It starts with interpreting that passion for this better quality product than drinking a VB or carton draft. Why are we drinking something different to what's cheap and affordable for everyone to drink? Well, we're drinking because there's an experience and there's an enjoyment and there's something with more value to it. And the reason why breweries are being successful today is because they are selling the value of drinking better.
What's your take, Ben, as a elder statesman of the scene?
You know. In what's happening, I sort of, I'm not that old, am I?
No, you're not old.
But we started young, though.
As a brewery, you've been around.
In the scheme of things, you're a veteran.
Yeah, a veteran. Maybe not elder statesman.
In the scheme of things, your brewery has been around a while. Yeah. Right?
The selling beer into the market has always had ebbs and flows and been up and down. So we always saw basically supply outstrip demand in terms of wholesale sales points and then a drop off. I don't think we're seeing that at the moment. We had periods in the past where you had it was easy to sell beer, then it was hard to sell beer. The places you used to sell, you had to put in more effort, and we didn't put in much effort at the start. Just call up and say how you're doing and make good beer and sell them beer, and then you need a sales guy and someone to advocate and to build relationships. That happens more now. I think the biggest issue is just access to those tap points. I know there's nothing really can be done, but I think there's an appetite for craft beer. You talk about the number of people that were in Bendigo today, local people in little towns like Beechworth, Rutherglen. You know, if you take that and multiply that out, and even in, there aren't too many breweries in the city, I don't think. There's a massive population there. The problem is getting those breweries' beers into tap venues around them. They, you know, if the population of Marrickville were only to drink craft beer, they probably could only supply, you know, or the suburbs around them. They probably could only supply those suburbs. And I think that's what we see in the States where it works. They've converted the whole neighbourhood to drink that beer.
Yeah, exactly.
But they have a different way of accessing the market. We really have the you know, we're going to be unfortunately battling with Bright and battling with Bad Shepherd for the same tap points in Melbourne. There's such a small amount.
Not battling, we're just collaborating with each.
No, but unfortunately the market ends up like that. If you grow, there's just that finite thing. And the pointy end,
I'm still going for collaborating, Ben. I'm still going for collaborating.
And we've got a sales rep here, and I'm sure you witnessed it before. So back in the day when I used to do the repping, it was kind of cool because when a beer rep came through, they're like, thank God you're not a wine rep. Come sit down. What can you sell us? And now when I go out with the sales reps, there's like, take a number, mate, or come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Because the guy who's running the venue it's like worse than dealing with wine reps. There's one every 5 minutes coming through the door. And
I'll vouch for that.
Yeah. You know how it is. Mm-hmm. It didn't used to be like that. So it shows, you know, that finite resource not being open up.
It's interesting that James brought up the topic of passion, and that for me, being around this business now for 15 years or so, and I've seen that, you know, that where that was the story, you know, passion. I was a passionate home brewer, and I'm really passionate about crafting beers that I want to drink, and I want to share that when I'm passionate about sharing it with you and all that sort of thing. But I think that's only going to get us so far once we get to 450, 500, 600 breweries. From Ben's point of view, I would argue that the smartest decision you ever made was putting on a CEO, because I think what a lot of brewers today don't realise is you've got to be a businessman first.
Yeah.
You can start off with that passion and be a great brewer, but at some point you say, okay, I've now reached capacity. What do I do next? And it's only really you've got to put a business hat on to say, okay, here are my options. It's not just a case of buying more stainless, because there's inherent costs with that. There's, you know, you've got to put more people on the road. You've got to there's a whole range of things. And how do I expand? Do I put in a bigger brew house, or do I put in more tanks, or
more sales guys?
Do I put in a canning line, all that sort of thing? So I would argue that the biggest threat to a lot of the brewers out there at the moment is that they don't have people
in the right positions, making the calls that sometimes, like, do you feel, Ben, that you couldn't have made the decisions that perhaps have been made now in the last year or so, because it's so hard to look at your product objectively.
Yeah, because I always feel that, because that's always the way. But I think the other thing is, yeah, just having someone else to look at the business strategically, and we're being forced, if we want to stay relevant in the market and compete, beer got a whole lot more professional, and there's breweries starting up with much more capital, much more professionalism. They start from the get-go with a sales team, and they have a dedicated marketing person or marketing team, really good distribution models, and business over the years has got so much smarter in beer. And I think, yeah, I think there is a risk for people who are truly passionate about beer trying to get in now with only that passion, because, you know, there's so many professional outfits that are out there with everything else. Some of them lack the passion and have everything else. Others have the whole complete kit to go out with.
But if you like, I had this exact discussion with Mick on the way here today about how craft beer, it's also a business, and if you don't understand the business, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to survive.
At the end of the day, a really good brewer, like if you're really good at making beer, that doesn't mean that you're a really good businessman. It doesn't mean you're a really good business person. It doesn't mean you can make those.
Guess what?
Those also hard business decisions. You're very good at
full of people with potential. Oh, yeah. Full of passion
and great
with
people,
great ideas.
But brewing beer is very different from running a company. Like they're two very different.
And we're
skills.
In a time where the business is consolidating. There's going to be buyouts. There's going to be shutdowns. There's not enough market share to support the number of breweries that are potentially opening in the next 5 years. You need to pay staff. Mm. You need to pay bills. You need to pay the bills for all the supplies that you use to make beer. And people need to understand that actually needs to be a business plan, or, you know, something more than just making beer and getting it out to your mates, because all your mates like your beer. And therefore, I speak to so many home brewers who think that they can open a brewery now.
I want to go professional because my mates reckon I
brew
the best beer.
My mates
is tops.
All my mates
homebrew's like farts. You know, you think yours are great and everyone else stinks.
But when you speak to them, it's like, oh, okay, so, you know, where's your place in the market? And you kind of dig into them. It's like, what's your understanding of the market? Where do you see your business in 5 years? And they have no idea. To make beer work these days, you have to understand the market. You have to understand it is a business. It is great to be passionate about the beer, to make beer. I mean, that's the heart and soul
of
your business.
But don't let us talk anyone out of
doing
it.
No.
It's more think about those things as well.
Absolutely.
Are you also, Ben, thinking about 2-3 years ahead? Like, it's no good saying, well, this is how much beer we need to fill current
that's
orders.
That's a job for his CEO. He just sits around and doodles on, you know, scrap paper these
days. But how do you kind of sit down and say, okay, well, where's Bridge Road Brewers in 5 years?
We do a strategic day every year. So we have a strategic plan. We update it every year. We update it 6 monthly. We have a board that basically we have a strategic plan that we follow, and everyone has what their objectives are for that. It looks into the future, Horizon 1 and whatever else you want to call it, but into the future. So we are strategic about what we do. I try not to let us be too business driven, because I think it's a real shame that beer is, you know, that we're going to see
corporatizing beer.
Yeah,
to some degree.
Corporate
yeah.
coming out.
Because that is still a
beer.
A differentiating factor between a brewery like yours and a brewery like CUB or Lion, right? Like, you're driven by the passion for the beer.
We all want to make money, and of course you need to drive that.
Barron's used to make great beer. Arctic Fox used to make great beers. Like, there's a lot of good beers.
Jameson's. The Beast. Yeah,
the Beast was back.
The Beast is back. That's the next topic. The Beast.
Well, the Beast was back today. It was at the festival.
That's one of my favorite beers of all time.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know it.
Social Bandit.
Social Bandit had the Beast IPA. So you know, that's. I want to make a quick transition, and it's sort of on topic. I think for me, a business model that's really exciting and someone who's doing something different is the beer we're drinking at the moment, Wildflower. So I think that's a fairly decent transition topic. You know,
when we cross over to Wildflower, I have a really good example. When I got into beer, at the time before I got into it, I was doing wine stuff and I was working at a winery in France with some other Aussie guys. And there were two Aussie guys, same age as me, maybe a little bit older. And there was no way to get into wine. I was going to get into wine and ended up getting into beer. So the wine industry in Australia was flooded, and it's like you're mad getting into wine, like we're sort of talking about.
With
but
beer,
these guys had a really clear focus on what they wanted to do, mm-hmm. and they executed it, and they have a growing winery in a market that is so flooded with wines, and they're doing really well because they had a clear objective, and they knew what their niche would be, and they were very, you know, I wouldn't say they're business guys, but they're running a business, doing it really well, making really good wine, but they're passionate about wine.
Yeah.
Just like we're seeing the example of the next beer that we're going to have, a guy that has chosen the niche within the bubble and the pointy end or wherever
we are. We've had him on the podcast a few times. He's a good friend of all of ours. He's done a very good job of basically saying, this is all I'm doing and I'm going to do it the best as anyone is doing. And that's what I'm going to do. That's it. Like, I'm going to do this to the best of my ability.
But he's also done his time in the industry. He worked at Batch. He understood the market. He got to that place.
He went overseas. He did things
with... Well, he worked at Flat Rock. Then he worked at Batch. Went overseas to Europe for about a year.
He worked with Jester King. He worked with...
He wasn't a guy who said, oh, all my mates like my homebrew.
Well, it wasn't one of those... I've been Google searching and hashtag sour beers is hot right now. I'm going to start a brewery that does, like, you know, wild ferment beers. Like,
Topher knows more about fermentation than anyone in the country. Like, he really knows his stuff.
Literally, when I was doing my Cicerone exam, Topher was my yeast guru. And I would literally... I'll be studying at 3 a.m. He's like, what...
Can that be the name of this?
Yeah, hashtag yeast guru.
And
was my yeast guru.
I'd be studying on, like, you know, what's the difference between decoction and step mashing? And so, something like that. I'll just message Topher and 2 a.m. I'll reply, oh, yeah, blah, 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 here's that. Like, and so when we used to work together at Batch, they used to hate it. I think they actually tried to change the roster. So I would be working the bar and Topher would be brewing. You'd never get anything done because literally I'd be like, walk away from the bar, like, what are you doing now? Why are you doing that? He's like, oh, yeah. And they're like, Liam, fuck off. Topher's got to do something. Like, okay. 5 minutes later, so why are you doing that? And he never got anything done, but I learned so much just like, yeah.
It's an interesting model too because Topher doesn't call himself a brewer.
He's a brewer and a blender.
So buying in wort. And I think...
He brews his wort. He just brews it in another site. So he brews it at Batch, but he actually brews it.
It's to his spec and he does it himself, but it's not...
But it would be a completely different... scenario and a very different business model.
If he had his own brew house.
And the reality is, do we really need, you know, in this country, 25 million people spread across such a wide area, do we need so much stainless? You know, that maybe there's some, maybe that's what we come up with as our unique point of difference is that we have, you know, shared stainless or...
And I think there's something
really
to be said.
Point, yeah.
I think there is, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't super keen on the idea of contract brewing. I know, you know, Ben's just gone to the loo, so this is... But he...
Talk
but,
behind his
you
back.
Know, but he, you know, a big...
But to be fair, Ben's also more about...
Being clear. I think that's super important.
It's now brewing Donkul at Bright Brewery, by the way.
Donkul dedicated pilot system.
So word on the street is your contract brewing at the moment, Ben.
See what happens when you need to go to the bathroom.
But I think, you know, that again, like, does every... If you're starting a brewery today, that capital investment to put in a brew house and all the tanks is a lot. Do we need that many? And is that the right path for every single person who wants to start their own brewing company?
Well, you look at the fact that if you look at it on a per capita basis, we have the same number of breweries as the US per capita.
Yeah, it's just scary, isn't it?
But our... You know,
but we have so much more spread,
and they're all
all spread. Exactly. It's not the same.
It's a very different
concentration.
Yeah.
That's Australia as a whole. We've got the coast, and there's people live around the coast. There's a giant.
There's
hole
nothing
in
the middle.
And it scares me when I see brewers who work, you know, create a really good buzz in their local area, and then go, "That's great. I'm in Brisbane or whatever. I've got these really great beers. Everyone loves it. I'm going to start sending it to Perth."
Yeah, don't. No. Just, I mean, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, if you focus
that's
on
to
your...
say, I want Perth people denied good
beer.
If you've got to focus on your local first and foremost, right? Like that is number one.
So is the brew pub model? Perhaps, yes. You know, are we getting? Back
I think
to,
so. I think the brew pub model is because in all honesty, I think that's
you know, like and big ups to people like Warren Pawsey, who you know started back at the Loaded Dog or the G-Bung Polo Club in Auburn, and you know back in the late '80s. And I think we were just kind of maybe 10, 15 years ahead of our time.
I don't think it has to be the brew pub model. It can be a model of...
Yeah, where are they now, Prof? Where are they now?
It can be mixed.
Shut down.
Yeah. So you want to be able to sell... You know, I look at the Stomping Ground model, and I think maybe they've got plans to be bigger and do the production model. I'm pretty sure they would have. But you look at that sort of example of a good brew pub that could do... package product and kegs for their local block. We do talk about the US model, so that sort of brew pub. But national distribution's open to everyone, but it's not always going to work for everyone.
No. You know what I think? I think people just want to know the people who make their beers. I think it's like, and like what I love
more,
about
more
Tofu
so, I think
is
people want to care about the beer. And it's like there's plenty of breweries out that don't have a face to them. Yeah. I think you know Bright. Bright's a bit of an example where we're a bit more of a team, less than a single
face. But your staff are the face.
Yeah.
But also, I think...
Sorry, Ben just shook
his
head.
But Ben has an amazing team behind him as well. Like
response. Yeah. But no, yeah, you need to have a connection with the beer that I think a lot of these brands don't have.
But I was going to say, like, Bright might not have a person as the face, but to me, like, the face of Bright is that town. Right, it is Bright itself. Is that?
That's it. I've done my job. I can go away.
but you know, like Tofu is a guy who's challenging the perception is brewing the beer the art of the beer, or is it the way you look after your beer, or something like that as well? But everyone's got their own
story.
Would
you guys be as into Wildflower if Tofu didn't exist? If it was a faceless brewery,
if the beer was as good,
and there was no Tofu, I mean, that's the thing. Whenever you hear Wildflower, you hear Tofu.
But we've got another beer in front of us. But the other thing is, I mean, it's a lot easier because I think we know Tofu and I consider him a friend and he's a really good guy. But if you think about Tofu, his branding of a Wildflower is all about the journey and the story. Like his blog was up before he even had beers available and he was telling the story before he could even get the beers. So I think people were invested in it before they could even try it.
I think Ben's got a good perspective here because you've released Mayday Hill. So that's a different brand that I feel like that you're less associated with because it's Mayday Hills and it's about the wild yeast. So I wasn't here for the first half.
That's sort of my project.
As a podcast. Yeah, you had to transition it out. And so, you know, why a different brand to release? Is there a bit of disassociating you with this?
No, that's actually... That's me. This is me associating myself with this. So,
is it
order
just disassociation from the rest of the beers? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, this is my sort of project is Mayday Hill. So, this is more.
It's more Ben than
Ben's
than Bridge Road.
Yeah, it's like Ben wants to do something. Let's just let him do it. But it comes
and
back
Ned's
to
still
the,
there. So there's still a visual link.
Yep.
To Bridge Road.
So the reason we have split it out, we talked about before. James indicated maybe we don't have tank space. We've got tank space. We don't have brew days. We just have so many beers in our stable. And to bring in this confusing range of Brett beers, I felt we needed to have some other brand that didn't confuse with Bridge Road because I mentioned before how many beers we're releasing in this month. And when we go through it, we'll do like 50 different beers in a year. We want to have some sort of consistency through the Mayday range. And the idea was rather than call it Bridge Road Brewers Britannomyces series or whatever, I just thought we could really, these beers do have a specific vessel they go in. They have a really local story. They use Brett. You know, it's just a different realm of beers. I think the taste profiles, except for Saison, is really separate from the rest of our beers. So that's more the reasoning behind that. Not so much. I'm not thinking that strategically, mate. I definitely, part of my strategic plan is to make the business less reliable on me because I have three young kids now. I also like to do things in my spare time. Before I had kids, I would work 80 hours a week. Love it. Love to do it. And I would still go out and do everything else. But now I'm old and everything hurts. And I have three kids and I probably should be at home and all those things. So there's definitely me transitioning out of having the business to be so reliable on me and me to think that the business is reliable on me is probably another part of that as well.
Should we take just a quick break? Yeah, cool. Let's take a quick break.
Sessionable.
Ever been in the work function and it's just cheap drinks on a boat for like the fifth year in a row? And you think to yourself, ugh, I wish I was doing something fun. Well, Dave's Travel and Events Group can help you out with that. With Dave's Events, they can hook you up with some great team-building activities like axe throwing. Or they can curate a nice degustation matched with some good beer. Or they can even help you brew your own beer for your staff and clients. Whatever your needs, Dave's Events can customise an awesome local beer experience for your workplace. So it doesn't have to be just drinks in a boat. Although it can totally be drinks in a boat. For more info, check out daves.com.au.
And we're back. Just for time's sake, I guess we're just going to do the beer recommendations. I've got a lengthy non-beer recommendation, but I'll save that for the next episode.
Personally, I only listen for the non-beer recommendations.
All right, well, I'll tell it to you privately.
That's how I decide what my life is.
I guess I'll start. My beer recommendation is a beer I had today at the festival, and I had a lot of it. I had it many times. It's one of my favorite beers. It's always been since the first time it was brewed. The Bridge Road Dark Harvest. It's tasting fantastic this year. You know, super fresh. Just a brilliant beer.
And to date, too, still the beer that holds the record for being the only collaboration beer to have got a spot in the Gab's Hottest 100.
Look at that. Yeah. We need to have you on every podcast,
number seven.
Prof.
Really? Like... Number 7, 2013.
Wow.
I'm more impressed by the fact that he knows that.
That's amazing.
I can say a lot of shit and people never check on it.
No one will check this. Yeah, you say what you want.
What's the rules on sort of honouring collaborations like, you know, years gone by? Because
I'm waiting for the lawsuit from McKellar, actually.
Yeah, is this still a McKellar collab?
Yeah, I mean, the recipe is still, the base malt recipe is still his malt recipe. And in fact, we try to use a different research hop variety in the harvest beers whenever we can, but in that beer we keep using the same one, which might become a commercially available hop soon, so I'm very excited.
Well, that's exciting.
I used to, every year when we made it, I would organize some beer to get to him. So that beer turned up in a bar in Amsterdam on tap, and someone sent me a photo.
Nice.
And I'm like, someone's like taking the piss, this can't be right. But we sent him some beer to tap in Denmark, and he also had a sister bar or a friend or something in Amsterdam, so that's why it was on tap there. I think he's pretty comfortable in life, and he's a very open guy. While I was name dropping about Firestone Walker, we also did a Bridge Road 20 beer tap takeover at McKellar Bar San Francisco in 2015, and Mikel was there with his artist whose name I should know, and I was the center of attention for 7 minutes, and then he walked in the door and I didn't exist anymore, and neither did Bridge Road. So he's a really good guy. He's a really smart guy, and I'm sure he has no issues, but I need to send him some more beer before the lawsuits come.
Yeah.
All right. My recommendation is perhaps a little bit controversial. I'm going to recommend a Pirate Life beer. It's the Alphonsale that they brought out over the last couple of weeks. It was to celebrate their third birthday, would it have been? Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Third birthday. Few kegs found their way to Sydney. The reason I liked it was because it was almost, I don't know if you could call it a throwback, but it was kind of, for me, it was a hark back to some of the earlier days of the American style ales that really kind of, for me, got me into beer in the first place. It was really Cascade heavy. There was some Mosaic in there as well, but the Cascade really shone through. There was lots of grapefruit and, you know, that kind of...
AB InBev influence, do you think, maybe?
Possibly, who knows, right? But it certainly hit my fancy anyway. I really enjoyed it. So, that was my recommendation anyway.
All right, Liam.
Stick the dagger in, Ben. Nice one. I was just trying to think what to recommend because... The last couple of days, we've had so many amazing beers, and I'm gonna be selfish and do two because my beer of the weekend has been probably the Blowhard IPA.
Blowhard Pale Ale.
But another beer I had just before we left this weekend, which I really enjoyed, was I went to the Forest Lodge Hotel, which is my local in Sydney, and they had a Dudge's tap takeover from Sweden, and they had a Tropic Thunder, which was basically like a Passiona beer.
So good.
And it was amazing.
So good.
And I just love the fact they had a tap takeover where every beer was under 4.5%. So I was there for about 4 hours and walked out completely sober. And it was amazing.
Not sober, but, you know.
I'm calling.
I want to hear more about the Blowhard Pale Ale that you had last night so, after dinner.
Well, I actually had
we had it
today
this morning as well.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I thought that was really cool. So just a bit of a juxtaposition from all the hot focus beers we've had this weekend. But yeah,
and despite James's baiting, I believe I was the one at the dinner standing up for the I think at Blowhard being around for about a decade. James, is that about right,
yeah,
or more
yeah,
or longer?
12 years now. Yeah.
I believe
because everyone else said it was shit, and he was like, "No, it's actually a really good beer." Now I'm joking.
Tom said, "Oh, I think we've been making it for 4 or 5 years," and I'm like, "I think you've been making it for more than a decade." It was the second beer or the
second
first
beer?
Beer.
Yeah,
yeah,
we
yeah.
have made it bright. Yeah.
Yep. So
yeah, and it's still just a fantastic
and he's still baiting you here.
What about you, Ben? You got a beer?
I had the Peach Melba the other day from Sailor's Grave, and I just thought it'd be nice to bring them into the conversation, just because I think they're another brewery that's really cut their own style and way of doing things. They have their own take on everything. They're really way out there in terms of being a regional brewery, and I think they're really a brewery to watch, like Wildflower yeah. is. And that was another beer I had from them that was really interesting.
It's a great beer.
They're one of my, it's
and I look forward to everything that they release, if Topher's going to do something, and when he does blend and release it, I want to try that.
So. Everything they do is a lot of fun. And
and I want to have the Hargroves Bramble, is it called? Collab? James would have had it because he's had everything. He's giving it the thumbs up.
Yeah. What about you, Meg?
Let me see. I think maybe the Hop Nation, the market, which was, you know, in a sea of neighbors that are out there on New England
IPAs. I've had like five people this weekend tell
me. Yeah, we've been talked about a bit on the bus on the way here, yeah.
So what's really cool and what's so impressive is it went beyond this, the seduction of the fact that it embraced its local community, because like they're based in Footscray in Melbourne, and that's got a really multicultural market around and population around that area. And what they did with the New England IPA style is they added elements that you could get at the Footscray market. So you get the Vietnamese mint, chili, mango, I think maybe like a couple other spices and things like that. And I just think, as with Saisons and as with New England IPAs, they're almost like the analogy of when a band does a cover version of a song. Are you just doing the cover version of the song just to ride the coattails of its glory?
Or do you make it your own?
Do you make
it
your own?
Yeah.
And I think that they've absolutely done that and been totally successful.
Yeah.
The only other recommendation I can make is Grateful Dead Europe 1972 tour. If you ever have to drive from Melbourne to Beechworth,
I haven't had that beer before.
No. In the morning. One show will get you to Beechworth.
Yeah, nice. That's good. Right. I like that you've timed that. That's
Prof, hit us.
Mine is, and we spoke before, we mentioned the re-release of The Beast, which is Social Bandit Brewing, which was formerly Jameson, which is really spooky because the recommendation that I thought up before the show was that was the Wrongside Brewing, which 18 months ago took over the old Jameson brewhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing a Schwartz beer and some really cool beers of their own, but the one beer they've got, which I tried today, that they said we had no intention of making this, but everyone said we want this beer, was their Raspberry Pale Ale, which was one of the first beers I reckon I had from Jameson.
Yeah,
and I think back to there was a bit of controversy over a poster that they brought out. I don't know if you guys remember, there was a poster they had with and I can't remember what the tagline was, but it was something like, you know, trying something a little bit different, you know, being the first raspberry sort of pale ale, and it featured a cartoon of Snow White smoking a fag in bed with the seven dwarfs.
Yeah,
and so there was massive controversy. And I remember thinking back then, this would be a dozen years ago, I'm thinking, fitting, I mean, if we can't sell beer by showing, Snow White's just gangbang seven dwarfs, what's the future hold? Seriously. look where we are now.
All right, James, I think it's your turn. You got to follow that one up.
It was a pretty good prediction.
That was awesome, yeah.
And since then...
It's all gone downhill.
It's just killed us.
Yeah.
We're all wearing high vis.
In prophecy.
Thanks, Dad. How old are you, Prof? 67?
He's still baiting.
I resemble that remark.
Okay, hi, I'm James. Because this is a Sydney podcast, I'm going to recommend a Sydney beer.
Suck it.
Know your market. Know your market.
I thought it was distributed on the internet. Isn't that like a global thing?
Pretty sure it is, yeah.
So I went down to Melbourne the other day. I had a cheese and beer matching event. I went to a new brewery in Melbourne, and I just really wanted something cleansing. I can't remember anything about this beer other than the fact that it was the beer that I wanted then and then. It was the Shenanigans India Session Grisette.
ISG, yeah.
ISG. I think I might have put hashtag ISA on the Instagram post that I did. But, yeah, that hit the spot, what I needed at the time. It was cleansing, it was refreshing, and it was just everything I wanted.
Did you have that with the cheese?
No, I had it well after cheese. I had it well after many beers, and I had it well after some other food as well. It was pretty much a nightcap for me, but in the most refreshing way.
A nutcap in the most refringing way.
I think that's probably a good.
And I think with that, we're going to call it a night.
So, as always, big thanks to Dave's Travel and Events Group for sponsoring the podcast. I'm sure.
And actually driving us down here, actually.
Yeah. For getting us down here. For making the whole thing possible. It's been a fantastic weekend. You can find us online on Twitter at Sessionable Pod. Instagram, Sessionable Podcast. Facebook, Sessionable Podcast. Sessionable.net. And if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated, especially if it's 5 stars.
While you mentioned that, we actually will be back here a bit later this year for the Darker Days.
The Darker Days, yeah. So
30th of June happens to be my birthday, but let's not talk about that.
If you're in the Sydney region or Canberra region, we'll have buses coming to the area, to High Country, for the festival.
Just like this one.
If you live in Beechworth, we could probably pick you up on the way.
We can find our own way down there.
Plenty of beds.
Before we go, Ben, how can we find Bridge Road on the internet? Where's the best place to find you on social and stuff?
Social media is at Naked Ned, which is quite confusing. Mm-hmm. Twitter's dead for me now. Instagram.
At dead for me now, is that it? No.
Instagram at Naked Ned, Bridge Road Brewers on Facebook, and bridgeroadbrewers.com.au.
Awesome.
Online.
Prof, where can people find you?
They'll find me wherever free beer is available. I will generally be not too far away. Brewsnews.com.au.
Awesome. And James, for you and Mick, where can we find Bright Brewery?
We're really easy. We're just Bright Brewery everywhere. So hashtag or at Bright Brewery.
B-R-I-T-E.
We're not confusing. Yes. B-R-I-T-E.
Hashtag plenty of capacity.
Yeah. All right, and I think honestly, I don't think we can go any further. Yeah, no. I think we have to finish this now.
Thanks to everybody for making this weekend possible. It's been a wonderful weekend.
Especially thanks to the Irish guy who's won't shut up. And also thanks to Adrian, who's going to have to sit through this and edit it.
I feel for Adrian.
Yeah.
We should save a beer for him.
Oh, we'll have a beer for him.